Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Welcome
howdy,
back.
Howdy, folks.
Hoi.
That's all I got to say to everything.
That's only because you are a sick and afflicted plague carrier.
Oh, bite yeah. me, fanboy.
I'm glad I missed all of it so far. Well, aside from when I was really sick in January, I have...
Hey, Zippy had flu over Valentine's Day, okay? We didn't do anything. Usually what we'll do is we'll do like co-op something or watch a movie together, something together. We never go anything crazy, but it's like a wonderful little tradition just to stay in and do something together. He was just like,
He's like, dying. Do you want to be sick together? And you're like, get away.
I had the same crap the prior week, and I went to work. It got so bad, though, on Monday and Tuesday, yeah. I stayed home. It was, so I had it for a week, and then I took 2 days off and was pretty much a mound of Theraflu and blankets.
Yeah, it was, when I got it, it was bad. I was sick for like 6 days. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been
and everybody knows that this year the flu has just got awful. And yeah, I'm glad that I survived it. And now they're saying that, what, strain B is coming around? So just like, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
no,
strain A
no,
was
no,
just
no.
has just passed. So now we're getting ready for the second strain. And I'm just like... No, I'm just going to sequester myself away from the rest of the world, hide, and eventually I'll come out when the spring is here. So, yeah, it's been rough. It's been really rough this year. And I'm never usually sick, and I've gotten sick 2 or 3 times this year. So It's really bad when I come down with something.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. It's I don't know what it was this year.
It was brutal this year.
It never completely kicked over into, oh my gosh, I want to destroy everything. Everything must know my pain. But it lasted longer than it normally does with me. Usually I get like 2 days and I'm over it. But this, oh my gosh, was nightmarish.
Yeah, well, like I said, it lasted for a week with me.
Wasn't it like the H3N2 this time that was kicking up again, and it's the one that we've got the most trouble creating an inoculation for?
So, and it mutated something again like at the last second or something right before it started.
Yeah,
passing.
The thing is, because we get our hints on what kind of flu we're going to be getting from, you know, Southern Hemisphere, and we make the flu vaccine based on that. And you know, it's a crapshoot, but we were wrong. This
so
time.
Wrong.
It was terrible. It's like this is misery. Yeah.
Yes, it was. But enough about being sick. I don't want to talk about being sick anymore. So you know, I've been playing in a Pathfinder game for a couple of months now, and I might be running something on the weekends that we don't play.
a 5K?
Because they, I've been asked by a couple of people, hey, could you run something? And I'm like, maybe. But it would be every other week because I've already got something else going on every other week. So it could be alternating from that, but it can't be. And they were like, oh, okay, that'd be cool. So I might be picking up a third game.
Most impressive.
And I'll get to I get to play in two of them, which is the funny part.
Even more impressive.
Yeah. And I only have to run one, and I don't have to run like my own homebrew thing. I get to do just an adventure path. Because I told them, I said, look, I'm already in two games. I do a podcast. I'm just like, I have way too much stuff going on. I need something that I can do with minimal or no prep. And they were like, just run one of those. We don't care. I'm like, bet.
Score.
And nice. That's what I'm going to do. So.
Sweet.
Anybody else been playing anything?
Well, our Deadlands game is starting to pick up some steam. So, yep. We got that going.
Nice. Fun.
And, you know, of course, everything goes sideways. We nearly got ourselves wrecked by tumblebleeds because one of our big heavy hitters, Zippy's character, is playing a mountain man. And pretty much they don't do, like, physical damage. They do stamina damage and just drain you. And they kind of critted and killed all of his stamina, a.k.a. wind in this game. And, oh, my gosh.
That's crazy. Sounds like a GM with it out for you. No.
Well, it's just how the dice. Fell. It was just because it's how much wind damage and blah blah. It's like, oh yep. My gosh.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, fun for that.
But yeah, it's been a productive time. I'm going to say, because normally I'm like trying to get a lot of stuff done, and I'm kind of getting into like spring, and I'm like, I really have lots of idea. You know, I've been like way more active in the last like couple of days than I have in months, just from the cold, you know, and it's not even cold here. Not by, you know, what I was used to, but it slows everything down, even down here, just because everything slows down even more than it already normally does down here in the South. Ish. South-ish. Because it's not really the South, but it's South-ish. Oh, no, they act like it is the South.
Technically, you're in the South.
I am in the Southeast U.S. Just barely.
Yeah.
And that Mason-Dixon line's pretty clear.
Yeah, well. Mm-hmm. But so we are going to go ahead and jump into our main topic here. Because this is a
difficult topic for everybody listening. We want to go ahead and at least put a heads up that we are talking about permanently losing a character and actually the player for different reasons. And that covers a lot of different areas, including, well, that player's death. And so if that's not something you want to spend your podcast time listening to, we understand. Skip forward about half an hour and you'll find us talking stat blocks and lexicon and recommendations. Yeah.
So, here we go. Our illustrious main topic. So, as we just said, either you're going to have... Sometimes it happens. Sometimes you can go 20 years before it happens. And when you lose either one or more players, and this isn't like a group dissolving, this is you still have most of your group. You've just lost one or two players, maybe. Because if you lose, yeah. if the whole group dissolves, that's a whole different topic.
But when the core of the group is still intact, but there's a seat empty, or two seats empty where someone else had been sitting for 6 months, a year, a decade before, how do you handle that at the table and in the game?
Right. And we're going to talk about the easy one first.
Sometimes life gets busy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
life happens.
Okay, perfect example. My old gaming group, when I moved from the Chicagoland area down here, they lost two players. Instantly, me and my wife were gone one day. Now, how much they played after that is suspect because our house was where we played all of the, you know. So I don't know if the group dissolved, but I do know that after we left, I know they played at least once or twice.
And because this is a hobby that's built around friendships and personal interactions, when somebody leaves, you kind of have to adjust. Now, when, as Jules put it, life happens, be it moving or be it another common thing that happens is, you know, sometimes gamers have kids and they don't quite have the time to come out and game anymore or sleep anymore. And that can pull them away maybe just for 6 months, maybe for a year, maybe for five, but they're gone. So some of those you've got a slow burn up to, you know, it's coming. And you can actually, as a GM, talk to that player and talk to them about what's left for that character to be resolved and kind of build in over the next several sessions part of a story that functions to put that character in a place where they can step away or die.
Yeah.
And leave the table feeling good about that story and have that moment of kind of closure. Conveniently.
Okay. So, so I'm going to say this because I've done this before, because when I used to work for the company that I used to work for, the buildup to the summer convention season becomes crazy. And I would be gone for months sometimes in a row. So I basically said, look, I know I'm not going to be able to play after this certain date. You know, just can't do it. Don't have the time. I'm going to be working. I'm going to be out of town a lot. So let's do this thing. And basically my character led to the death of a very, very beloved NPC. And he became the pivotal villain for the rest of the story arc. Because he basically turned on the entire party. So that's a way to do it. You know it's coming. Here's something that you can do. Now, do you always do that? No, sometimes the guy just retires.
Well, and one thing we're going to talk about in a few minutes is also kind of the off-camera between scenes moment. And sometimes that's the best answer here, especially when it's permanent, but maybe only as permanent as, like, you know, Bucky's death in Marvel Comics. Permanent for a couple of decades, but then, I don't know.
Sure. Sure. And that is a good way to do it. I mean, especially if you do superhero stuff, because everyone knows you can't ever kill off a superhero. You know, even the ones that are killed off still find a way back.
Yep.
I mean, we used to have a scale and Bucky was on one end and the Red Skull was on the other, where one's just going to be back next week, I'd say washing their laundry at the laundromat, and the other one, well, yeah, obviously that's changed. You know, we've got Barry Allen back. We've got Bucky back. There's a chance in superhero and high fantasy to always bring someone back. And if you do it off scene, if you describe it without the players seeing the roles happening between scenes, you've got more ability to kind of fudge it. You know the trope. If you don't see the body, they're not really dead.
Yep.
Now, the next time and place that somebody leaves the gaming group, possibly permanently, it starts getting a little harder. And that's where you start seeing a conflict develop between different players or between a player and the GM that results in them leaving, that that requires them to no longer be part of that group. Now, this is where you've got a little more responsibility as a GM, because it could be really, really cathartic to just take out all the frustrations and animosity and anger at the table on that now departed player's character. Yes. Set them up as the villain or the patsy and just let the players' characters go to town.
You can do that.
But
it is...
it's a fine line to walk, because fostering that additional animosity can blow back into the real world or could perpetuate at the table and transfer to somebody else.
And you don't want to have the whole group just like, well, God, you guys did that to him as soon as he left. I don't know if I really want to hang out with you guys anymore. And yeah, it just, it can grow and it can fester, because it could take months for that to happen. For them to realize, oh my God, this is really, you guys are really just, for lack of a better term, you guys are assholes for letting that happen. Why didn't you just let his character go off, or he died off camera, just something else other than us beating the crap out of him?
Yeah.
And again, that this is something that oftentimes is going to be more sudden. Yeah. There may be hints of it. It may be something you wonder, is this going to happen? But when it actually happens, it'll usually catch you off guard. And that's okay. But that does put you in the position of how do you deal with that at the table constructively. And one of my favorites is an off-screen betrayal or selling out, especially if we're talking about a mercenary character or something that it fits. How many times in TV shows have you seen that happen between seasons when a character didn't come back?
Or even in a series, like, you know, you see the bad guy doing this thing, like somebody that's supposed to be a good guy selling out the others. And you're just like, I want that character to die. Because it's just.
And they just walk away and they're never seen again.
Because they did their thing. They gave the information that they needed to, so that the bad guy had the upper hand. And that is a great way to use that.
Absolutely.
And what's even better.
And the thing is, like, also, it also keeps the integrity of the whole game when you do something like that. It doesn't feel, it's jarring, but it doesn't shake the immersion, I guess is a good way of describing that.
One of the good things with doing that, let the other players, like, describe the cutscene to the other players so they know who did it, but they can't do anything about it. Because that way, it's like, yes, this person betrayed us, but we have this bigger issue now that we are going to have to deal with. And
it helps focus the players on back onto the story. Like Jules was saying, it keeps your immersion, but gives you some of that catharsis without it becoming a self-perpetuating cycle of negativity,
for lack of a
less succinct way of putting it. But Jules, how have you found a good way of dealing with these sorts of sudden or sometimes the build-up player departures? For you, what's been an effective way to help the table keep going?
Well, we've It depends on, it really honestly depends on the how, why, and when they left. Like, if we knew that it was coming, like, you know, okay, they're being transferred to, you know, Japan for a year or something like that. Usually what I'll do is we'll chat with the player, we'll chat with the game, and depending, and it really also depends on the game. You know, if we're playing Mutants and Masterminds and we're kind of having, a face, like no heels, all that kind of stuff, I can usually, and we know it's coming, you know, like we've got like a month or something. Usually I can throw in something. So they'll be off doing a, mysterious backstory comes in and that character is gone. We don't know when they're going to be back. You know, and we've seen this. I mean, Teen Titans, when Robin goes off to fight Slade for a while and the rest of the Titans kind of deal without him. And that actually gets some growth and for the other players dealing with the character's loss. But, you know, they're not dead. They're not. And it's, there's another adventure. And if he comes back, we can probably reintegrate it. But if not, you know, it actually gives an interesting role play moment of, since the whole dynamic has changed. And that's actually kind of interesting and fun to do. And usually the person that's leaving really enjoys it because they get to their absence is actually going to be a plot point. So, you know, they still feel part of the group as they are going to be leaving. Now, if they kind of just, you know, flip the table, you know, drop off the face of the earth, you know, pretty much if they left in a negative way due to them being a jerk or worse, you know, usually what will happen at that point is, you know, I tap the players. It's like, all right. And as always, you know, if you're running a horror game, that's a really good one, you know, because they're gone. No reason, no one knows, and it builds up the tension. But if it's, you know, we're playing D&D and they were the cleric and, you know, no one messes with the, you know, the thing is like no one messes with the healer, you know, then it's, you have to kind of figure out what you would want. If it's a real big, crazy dynamic shakeup, sometimes I'm like, okay, guys, pause. Let's play board games. And we kind of talk about it. As always, communication, communication, communication in life, in love, and in board games and, you know, tabletop RPGs, you know, and see what they want to do. Because sometimes the player's actions of, you know, table flipping and being a jerkwad might sour the whole thing and they can't go on from that. But if, you know, all right, if they're able to go like, all right, have him be eaten by a monster in the next encounter or something, you get kind of hints from their players whether you want, do you whitewash it like they never were there? And sometimes that's okay to do. You know, they were waxy, glassy syndrome. No one else was ever traveling with us. We never had a cleric. Or, you know, have them eaten by a bugbear, you know, next random encounter, kind of a thing. You know, and if, here's the thing, if the, and I've had this when I had a player in the game pass away, unfortunately. Still miss him. One of the coolest dudes ever. What we actually did is turn, you know, it's like every, on the anniversary of his death, we always like, you know, we'll all talk around and say, it's like, oh, what we missed with the player. And what we do is kind of turn something that was iconic about that character, or sometimes the person, sometimes if you couldn't, you know, get it exactly, into some kind of icon or relic or something in the game as a way to memorialize them, to kind of keep the spirit alive. And sometimes, you know, so it's like, all right, smartest guy in the world. And then he was in a superhero game, always wore a leather jacket. Well, that leather jacket kind of becomes iconic, you know, like Captain America's shield or something. And it, in a way, it actually gives the players and the characters a way to still kind of hold on to it a little bit. But it, you know, it acknowledges they were there, and each character and each player, you know, they might ignore it. And they'll be actually be able to go through some of the stages of grief dealing with it in game in a little bit of a safer place, which is kind of weird. But that's how we ended up.
And that's exactly the next point we've got to make, and that's we're all probably going to game with someone who passes away at some point. When you've got five or six people or more at a table, only one of them is going to die first. And as the GM, you've got a delicate balance to strike, which Jules just touched on, which is keeping that group together, keeping the game together, but also providing some of that processing, some of that catharsis for the players by proxy through their characters in that game. And you made one really strong way about doing that and describing keeping that part of the character around for the characters and by extension the players and letting them create that memorial. And that's, I think, a really good thing. Similar to what we talked about already, you've got the possibility of a slow decline in health to give you time to kind of make the choices of how to push it. But there's also the chance for a very sudden death.
Accidents happen.
And the long-term death. But here's the best thing also is, you know, if, you know, I'm playing this out in my own head, believe it or not. It's the, when you get that terminal diagnosis, it's also, it's a way for the players not only to, you know, kind of start processing and say goodbye, but it lets the person that is dying, it lets them, you know, they, the GM, you be a little bit flexible, but then they can start doing something amazing. They can have some of the best adventures of, you know, of their life with their friends, making memories. You know, it's not focusing on how they're, you're pretty much at that right point in time, making them a legend, you know, giving them the swan song that they've always wanted the stories that'll be told for years and years. We call them war stories, you know, and it allows them to, in a way, it actually kind of lets them figure out how they want to go out. And the person dying actually figures out a way to kind of deal with the inevitability of death. And you figure out how do you want to do it? Do you want to do it where, you know, say if you're playing a horror game, it's like, oh yeah, now I'm going to really start messing with these people and haunt them. And, you know, and it, because the inevitability of death doesn't always have to be so sad and depressing. You can laugh with them. Sorry.
That's exactly the point. And when you've got the time to be able to build that legend and to work with, especially that player, that's a fantastic thing to do. And you hit the nail exactly on the head. And when it's sudden, you've got two real choices. One, you reflect what happened in real life in the game. You open a session with that character dead and allow no reason.
You don't have to put a reason why they died in the game. Because sometimes in life when they die, there's no reason.
It may not be a reason. It may have been if you're playing a fantasy game, you open at the end of a fight where someone is dead. And you let players directly put that shock and directly put what they're still processing from the sudden death of their friend at the table into their characters. And that's one, it's hard to describe what that can or can't do for a player, but it gives them a way to grieve. It gives them a way to express. And for some players, they don't have the awareness or they don't have the permission to express those emotions outside of the game. And you need to know your players. You need to be able to recognize what it is they need. The other option is to take control of that PC yourself for a little bit and move them into a position where they become a legend, where they become what we've talked about for a session or two. And whether that helps your players or not, whether you're able to recognize a way to do that is something you as a GM have to figure out for yourself.
Because some people just can't do that and they don't want to, because I know I would have a hard time because I feel like I would tarnish what they've done. And yeah, it's one of those, it's a tough call to how do you do this? And it is not something that
there's not a right answer. There's only the right answer for that table at that time.
Yeah. And it's also what you can handle as a GM and what your players can handle. If you're in a place where you can't quite deal with that, that's okay. You know, you don't have to, you know, be strong for everyone else. If you can't,
you're human.
Okay.
You're supposed to,
you know,
hey,
let's play board games.
And sometimes it takes that perspective of stepping away for a little bit,
you know,
to be
it's
able
like,
to come back to do it. Like you were saying, like, you know, play board games, do something else, something to kind of help work through it by all of you just getting together and still being friends. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's the thing. Everyone moves through grief different at different paces. Some people move through it disturbingly fast, but that's how they work. Certain people much, much longer. So, you know, it's like I said, everybody's different. Everyone has their own hangups, quirks, mental whatevers, you know, and, you know, say, and here's the thing, like, say if, you know, the rest of your group wants to get back into the game and one of the players isn't comfortable with it. All right. That's maybe they can go on a side thing. And because the other players kind of need the game to, you know, kind of to deal with something, but, you know, maybe on a different day or, you know, you, instead of weekly, you'd move the game every other week. And the other time, the rest of you guys get together for board games until,
they find,
you know, the group kind of finds it's not a normalcy, but they find that you find an equilibrium again, you find your feet under, you find a place where you can all be together sometimes. And here's the thing. Sometimes something that tragic, the game might not go on, and that's okay too. Yeah. That happens. You know, here's the thing. Don't force yourself. Sometimes, you kind of have to, you know, steel the spine a little bit just to give, you know, a little bit of support for a friend that's falling into despair because you really don't want that. But sometimes it's just like, no, we can't do it. We can't pull this together again.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
Everybody kind of has to step away from the game because,
you know,
all can't move past this point and you can't all have fun with it again because you're still trying to process what happened to one of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's okay to step away from it for a while, specifically that game. And do something, you know, if you were playing like a real serious horror game, step away and play, you know, a popcorn game of, you know, just something screwy, goofy, and off
big
the
eyes,
wall.
Small mouth, you know. Gardemanger, what was the one that was just absolutely ridiculous and silly? I can't remember. You mentioned it a couple episodes ago.
There are several absolutely ridiculous and silly
the
ones out there.
The Baron Munchausen.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say there's Baron Munchausen.
Oh.
There's, you mentioned Big Eyes, Small Mouth.
Of course.
I shoot you. You're a traitor to friend computer.
Yeah. Paranoia is probably
Tune.
The... Although if we're dealing with death, might not be the best one unless you guys all have... Unless you're like me and, you know, everyone else, we all have the darkest sense of humor. So that would actually help.
That change of pace, you know, can be what you need. And don't be afraid to recommend it. And don't be afraid to want or need that in this situation.
But I think with this one, because it's just so heavy, I think we're going to go ahead and stop here because we can keep going on about different ways for you to process it. But that's what we have a Facebook group for. And you should come find us. Where at, Gardemanger?
at facebook.com/seizethegm.
Yes. Well, it's both, isn't actually. It one is a page and one is a group. The group is where we all interact, but the page is
so
also
hit both of us
the
up
place
there.
Where you can comment to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will tell you guys something now, to be honest, is like, everyone in the world knows that I am not the healthiest of individuals, mentally, physically, emotionally, psychically.
No, I think you got them all.
Et cetera. Have I missed anything? All right. Yeah. Even my superpowers go crazy. But here's the thing. I already have, it's like, this is, right, when I die, this is what I want. And I have, you guys know what I want, you know, you know, the thing is, like, also, here's the thing. If you are very ill, and as a player, talk to your GM. And, you know, you don't have to make it this whole pity me, but just let them know just in case and give them a couple ideas. Because, one, it'll help because it's kind of like it's kind of like you as a player giving your last will and testament on how to fuck with everyone else. And I'll be honest, there's a bit of just kind of just innate that the whole like Schadenfreude delighting in everyone else's miseries, like, oh, this is going to wreck everybody. And I love the chaos. But like you see this in like Cthulhu games and stuff. So, you know, it can help. So,
and on that,
believe me,
at just about the 30-minute mark where we said people should come pick up if they wanted to skip over the main topic. We will take this chance to roll on into
And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game. Go to Mojay, go.
Zaps Inexplicable Bubbly Gum, now available at a store near you. Zaps Inexplicable Bubbly Gum. You've heard of bubblegum, but now hear about our patent-pending bubbly gum. This delightful confection does more than just tire your jaw and let you blow bubbles. It is bubbles. That's right. Act now and this inexplicable substance is yours at your local convenience store. Revel as it coats your mouth and bubbles up. Feel that effervescent fizz. Let those bubbles escape on their own to float up, up, and away to everyone's delight. It's fun for everyone and comes in a wide variety of flavors, cherry, grape, snozzberry, and pomegranate lime. Don't wait, don't delay, get down to the store now for Zaps Inexplicable Bubbly Gum. Zaps not responsible for any haircuts required after the use of Inexplicable Bubbly Gum. Warning, do not swallow active Inexplicable Bubbly Gum. Warning, do not mix bubbly gum with grapefruit, grapefruit juice, carbonated beverages, salt, or soy products.
I love it.
Pomegranate lime? Oh my god.
That was great.
That was brilliant. Oh my god. I love it. I'm not following that one, dude.
All right.
Your turn, Zen.
I can't.
The dark passage yawns from the roots of the great yew tree. As you crawl down into the darkness, the smell of old damp things and rot fill your nostrils. You crawl down the passage for what feels like hours, and after a sharp turn, the light from the small fire is blinding. There's just an earthen floor and diaphanous drapes hanging from the roots of the great tree above. From behind the drapes, you hear the sound of something scraping on the floor. As the hangings move, you see someone start to move from the shadows. The hand flashes forward, and small pieces of something wooden bounce off of you. The person scrambles forward to grab the ones that hit you, and the light hits the middle-aged woman as she finishes scooping up the wood chips. She doesn't say anything to you as she lays them out. So that you see the runes carved into the chips. She starts to tell you of the things to come and the things that have passed before. The feeling as you crawl back up to the surface is like being born, or what you think it must be like. The world's possibilities sing to you from the voice of Owen.
Very nice.
Okay, I'm glad. Thank you. You changed the mood just perfectly. Thank you, dude. Holy crap. I'm sorry. With what I came up with, I couldn't follow Garamanger. I'm sorry. All right. And tonight I've got the playground. There are many stories about the playground. Older kids whisper its legends and lore to the younger ones, usually dire warnings and the like. The stories about the playground are usually so horrible and gruesome that most kids avoid playgrounds that fit the vague description given to them by their peers. But not all kids. I mean, who would think that a playground is something to be feared, something to be avoided? The playground usually appears in vacant lots. You know the kind of lots you stumble on when you're exploring or having an adventure? The metal swings, metal slide, and metal jungle gym are surprisingly sturdy given their age. There's even one of those old merry-go-round spinners in a metal hidey cave. You remember those, right? They're kind of like habit trails for kids. And they all work just fine. Heck, they're a lot more fun than those plastic safety jungle gyms that don't let you slide fast and you get all staticky. These throwbacks to bygone days are so much fun to play on. Running up and down the jungle gym, swinging on the monkey bars, and going down the fireman's pole and slide as many times as possible is tiring, but so much fun. The kids don't notice the faint whiff of wood smoke. They mentally attribute them sweating to running around or wearing that stupid-looking sweater that Mom thinks makes them look so grown up. Ugh. They start to get tired, but there's still so much fun to be had. So they start swinging on the swings and playing in the cave. And there's so much laughter echoing in the caves that they don't hear the faint click of a latch. And they don't realize that there's no way out until it's too late. A few hours later, the playground disappears, leaving behind a pile of ash and the faint swell of wood smoke. Many monsters of yore had to grow and adapt to modern times. Seems that Baba Yaga made the transition to modern day just fine.
I was wondering if that was going to be Baba Yaga when you started.
How come?
It started clicking with all of the indicia of Grandmother Crone for me. And I was like, I know how you think, and it's similar to how I think. And so there was this moment of, you know, if I was doing this, I might. Wait, she's doing it, isn't she?
Yep.
Baba Yaga is an always giving example of a legend and myth.
Oh my god! If you actually read the old stories, like every time you read it, it's different. So
I know it's like, and that's the kind of reason.
Look, I still want to chase player characters
with
flying mortar and pestle one of these days.
I've done it. Little Fears, thank you very much. They already statted her out.
Yeah, but I want to do it in a non-horror-based game just to make them all have those absolute moments of, but I'm some hero and I'm supposed to be.
Oh,
why
you know what? No. If I ever run a superhero game again.
Yeah.
Well.
Hopefully not too bad on that one, guys.
Lots of illness will do that, so it's okay.
I know I've been lacking a bit.
All right, so let's go to the next thing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, do the thing.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
All right. So we're not going to do the normal, you know, because this is actually a fairly common word. I know.
Oh,
it's omen.
Depending on what the common word is. Come on.
Now, the noun, the definition of omen is an occurrence or phenomenon believed to portend to a future event. So like augury. It is... The origin and etymology is from Latin, omen, and its first known use is 1582, and is in the top 40% of words used. So,
It's also the post-crisis code name given to Lilith in Teen
and
Titans.
And many other things. Omen is a fairly common word, but I figure
we have
those, and we also have words that are in like the top, bottom 10%. So I have gone to some pretty far extremes on how common and uncommon things are. So, but yeah, it's an easy one. And I figured with
it's a good word to use, and it's got a lot of flexibility. You can use it literally in fantasy games where it is an augury, where it is a portent of some kind. You can use it figuratively in a lot of other games where it's symbolic.
Feelings
and those omens are just
there's all kinds of ways to
point it out
it.
As yeah. It also from the theater standpoint, you also get issues like Chekhov's gun, where you set up an omen where a comment is made or something is put on the table that is going to get used by the end of the adventure. Chekhov's gun reference, if you mention or put a gun prop on stage in Act 1, it's going to be shot before the end of Act 5, or you wasted everybody's time. It's just true. If the question is, are the barbarians going to ever figure out a way to breach that wall or breach that gate?
Yeah.
Well, then your adventure is going to have them breaching the gate at some point.
Yeah.
That's how to use omens in your game
tonight.
All right,
so let's go ahead and try to wrap this bad boy up with closing remarks. Go to Moshe. What do you got?
All right, you go first then.
All right. Okay, so
I knew that. I
have not actually played, but I have watched my wife play this for the last. She bought it last night, and since then, she has played in under 24 hours. She's played over 12 and a half hours of this game, and it is Stardew Valley. It is. If you were to take like Terraria,
oh god,
and Minecraft, and took away the crazy like elements of like a truly overarching like you have to do this, then you do this, then you do this, where you can just kind of putz around in it, that's Stardew Valley. Like, it's all of those builder games, mm-hmm. but kind of laid back. And there is something of a storyline, so if you want to do that, you can do it, but...
Look, right, Katamari Damacy had a storyline too, but we don't talk about it.
So... But it is... It's really cool. My six-year-old daughter... decided last night that she wanted to play it. And so my wife made her a save, did a couple of the kind of things that you kind of have that you should do in the very beginning so that a six-year-old doesn't get, you know, tired of the game at that point. And she played for like 3 or 4 hours today. So, I mean, when it can hold a little, you know, a six-year-old's attention span for that many hours. It's a pretty cool game. So that's mine. Go to Mojay. What do you got?
Well, one of the fun things that I did recently was I managed to find this stack of CDs from when I used to listen to CDs a whole lot. And that includes sticking, you know, 150 MP3s on one CD to play in the car instead of having Bluetooth. So I found or refound some music, and I'm going to recommend an album. And it's an album by Alabama 3 or A3. Now, you may have heard of them because of a remix of one of their songs being used as the opening for The Sopranos. And I'm recommending the debut album, Exile on Cold Harbor Lane, which I think Wikipedia's got a good description of it. They mix rock, electronic, blues, country, gospel, and spoken word styles into one seamless unit. I'm recommending Exile on Cold Harbor Lane aside from the eclectic nature of the music, but because each track is an inspiration for a character. you could listen to each track and create a dozen different characters just based on what is in those
That's
songs.
Really cool.
And I think it's great.
Yeah, that is really cool.
That is, dude, yeah.
The original version of the song they used for the Sopranos opening is better than the remix they used for the Sopranos opening. Jules, you need to go listen to it tonight. Okay, you've got XL.
Okay, dude.
Okay.
Yes. No, that's why okay. I said awesome. You meanie. All right, I've got a webcomic. All right. And it's weird, but all right, it's called Wopsie Square. And it's probably one of the weirdest. It starts out kind of like, oh, you know, kind of like it's YA slice of life kind of ish for the first couple of comics. And this comic's been going for, God, I know over 10 years. I know it's been going for over 10 years. But it starts and you're like, and then it takes a hard right into, oh my God, WTF, when the main character, Monica, accidentally releases the Tepoz Tecal, the Aztec god of alcohol. And no, it doesn't get all silly from there. It actually gets dark as hell. But to be honest, this actually got me through a couple of suicidal episodes because there's a part in there where Monica, who's the main character, she talks about having the demons in her back pocket. Doubt, anxiety, fear. And she's talking about them. And she's like, if I don't listen to them, if I don't do exactly as they say, they become completely and totally harmless. And it's actually was a weird philosophy. And I thought about, it's like, okay. You know, it's like taking your own inner demons and turning them into your advisors and tools. But to realize that you don't have to do what they're telling you to do. It was probably one of the most empowering things I've ever kind of heard out of a web comic. And it's amazing. But man, it gets dark and it's creepy and it's actually really interesting because a lot of the references to Aztec mythology are right. And the guy's art style is really unique. So check it out. Also, later on, there is a librarian named Fix. She's a griffin. No, she's a sphinx. She's a sphinx. There's another one who's a griffin, but she's a sphinx. That's and cool. It's awesome. You know, and she's got the square glasses too. So it's just like, ah, so absolutely amazing.
Hey, it's okay.
Sorry. Went off a little bit again on there.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah. Such is the way
okay,
of things.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that one
so, yeah.
wraps everything up, folks. So until next week.
Tighten the bow.
Oh. Oh, before I forget,
we
had a join to the Facebook group. His name,
you forgot.
Tony Campbell.
Welcome.
Ooh. Yeah. I was going to shout him out last week,
Yay!
I think. And
welcome. Hi.
Everybody was sick, so we were just like, we won't be recording. It's okay.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I just wanted
Sorry,
to get that out there
pig.
Before we
Unclean.
Wrap everything up. So, yeah. So,
Look
have a good
to
one, folks.
With you, dude. We'll see you all next week.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under Creative Commons Attribution's Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by The Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.